We've had a really wonderful time so far studying the book of Exodus. We're getting a little bit of extra information here from the book of Jasher. The book of Jasher was quoted three times in the Bible, Joshua 10:13, 2 Samuel 1:18, and 2 Timothy 3:8. And it's been quoted actually more than that because some of the writers quoted Jasher without ever mentioning Jasher at all. In other words, information like the Apostle Paul. Now let's go back and read a little bit more from the book of Jasher. We're about Exodus 1 and 8 so far. But let's go back and get some background from Jasher. At the time, Hadad, the son of Bedad, the king of Edom, and the Samlah from Masrekah, from the country of the children of the east, reigned in his place. In the 13th year of the reign of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, which was the 125th year of the Israelites going down to Egypt, Samlah had reigned over Edom 18 years. And when he reigned, he drew forth his host to go and fight against Zepho, the son of Eliphaz, and the children of Shechem, because they had made war against Angeas, king of Africa, and they destroyed his whole army. But he did not engage with him, for the children of Esau prevented him, saying he was their brother. So Samlah listened to the voice of the children of Esau and turned back with all his forces to the land of Edom, and did not proceed to fight against Zepho, the son of Eliphaz. And Pharaoh, king of Egypt, heard this saying, and saying that Samlah, the king of Edom, has resolved to fight the children of Shechem, and afterwards we will come and fight against Egypt. And when the Egyptians heard this matter, they increased labor upon the children of Israel, lest the Israelites should do unto them as did them in their war with the children of Esau in the days of Hadad. So the Egyptians said unto the children of Israel, hasten, do your work, finish your task, and strengthen the land, lest the children of Esau and your brethren should come and fight against us. For your account will they come against us, or your brethren, you know. And the children of Israel did the work of the men of Egypt day by day. And the Egyptians afflicted the children of Israel in order to lessen them in the land. They were going to work them to death. You know, when in the diaspora, after Christ was crucified on the cross, basically by the orders of the Jewish people, demands of the Jewish people, they were carried off into the world. And sometimes the Jewish labor, Jewish persons as slaves, were so cheap that they just bought them and they worked them until they died without feeding them or letting them rest.
Yeah.
They worked them until they fell over. They didn't feed them. They weren't going to take care of them. Because they were cheap. They were so cheap they could buy another one and replace them. But the Egyptians increased labor upon the children of Israel, so that the children of Israel increased and multiplied, and all Egypt was filled with the children of Israel. And in the 125th year of the Israelites going down into Egypt, all the Egyptians saw that their counsel did not succeed against Israel. And they increased and grew in the land of Egypt. And the land of Goshen was filled with the children of Israel. So all the elders of Egypt and its wise men came before the king and bowed down to him and sat before him. And all the elders of Egypt and the wise men thereof said unto the king, may the king live forever. You do counsel us, the counsel against the children of Israel, and we did unto them according to the word of the king. But in proportion to the increase of the labor, so do they increase and grow in the land, and behold, the whole country is filled with them. Now therefore, our Lord King, the eyes of all of Egypt are upon you to give them advice with your wisdom by which they may prevail over Israel to destroy them or diminish them from the land. And the king answered and said to them, give your counsel in this matter, that we may know what to do unto them. And an officer, one of the king's counsels, whose name was Job, from Mesopotamia in the land of Uz, answered the king, saying, If it please the king, let him hear the counsel of his servant. And the king said unto him, and speak. And Job said before the king, the princes, and before all the elders of Egypt, saying, behold, the counsel of the king, which he advised formerly respecting to the labor of the children of Israel, is very good. And you must not remove from them the labor forever. But this is the advice, counsel, by which you have may lessen them, if it seems good to the king to afflict them. Behold, we have feared war for a long time, and we said, when Israel becomes fruitful in the land, they will drive us from the land if the war should take place. If it please the king, let a royal decree go forth, and let it be written, the laws of Egypt, which shall not be revoked, that every male child born to the Israelites, his blood shall be spilled upon the ground. And by doing this, when all the male children of Israel shall have died, the evil of their wars will cease. They're talking about a long-term situation here, 50, 60, 70 years. Mm-hmm. Let the king do so and send for all the Hebrew midwives and order them in this matter to execute it. So the thing pleased the king, and the princes and the king did according to the word of Job. And the king sent for the Hebrew midwives to be called, of which one name was Jephrah, and the other name was Puah. And then we have this story here. Now we can go back into the Bible and read up to where we are here now. Now whether this was Job or the Bible, we do not know that. Possibly not. Now let's read in verse number 8. And we're in Joshua 65 and verse 37 where this takes place. Vayagam melech hadash el mitraim asher lo yada et Yosef. And arose a king, a new king, over all of Egypt, the land of red mud and canal banks, who not he had known Joseph. Now, and then they say here, in verse number 9, Vayomer el amo hene am b'nei Yisrael Rav, we assume Mimenu. That's how it reads from the Hebrew. And he said and kept on saying unto his people, behold, the people, the sons of Israel, numerous and strong, much more than we are. And then it says, come, let us deal deceitfully and craftily like a serpent toward them. And we're talking about political upheaval now in the land. Remember what they've done already. They've already dealt with them. They said, come over here and work for us. And when they got over there, then they cut off their wages and made them become slaves. They paid them for a while, and all of a sudden the pay diminished. Lest, and it's talking about he multiply, and that third person, masculine, singular, cal, and perfect. He, as the nation of Israel, as one person, but it's his children. He, Israel, may multiply and become, and when it happens to us, war, and he shall be joined also with our enemies, and he shall fight against us and go up from the land. We're going to lose our labor force now. He's going to go up from the land. We'll lose our labor force. Now it says, Vayishmu, and they placed over them princes, Ser is the word, princes, warriors, superintendents, administrators, by force, powerful administrators. in America today, we have this kind of problem also. The Biden administration now has increased taxes, and not only have they increased taxes, but they're going to hire tens of thousands of IRS agents, and they're going to arm them and send them against the people. This sounds like the same type of thing here. Who is going to be paying for all of these taxes in America? It's going to be the middle class America that's going to take the biggest brunt of it, because I can guarantee you those billionaires at the head of the Democratic Party are going to pay nothing. And they're billionaires. About the time of Lyndon Baines Johnson, after he basically killed John Kennedy with the FBI, the CIA, and the Department of Justice working with him, and the Bush family, and a whole horde of other scoundrels. They took care of their pet things that wasn't getting done by John Kennedy. John Kennedy wasn't absolutely pure in white skirts, but boy, did we get a mess with Johnson and his bunch of cronies. But Johnson drove conservative America out of the Southern Democrats into the Republican Party. Conservative America at that time was the Southern Democrats, but he drove them into the Republican Party, and the Republican Party did a lot of changing about that time. It had changed with Teddy Roosevelt a lot during his term, but that one changed the Republican Party a lot. But in the Republican and the Democratic Party, we have a lot of scoundrels that are living off of us and selling out America to foreign entities like China and Russia and many other, Saudi Arabia, etc. Now, placing princes over them, they're going to abuse them, these princes, these big shots, these people of like the DOJ and the FBI and the CIA. It makes me so sick when I see those people interrogated. You said, I don't have to answer that. Yes, they do. And they got to answer to God, too, on top of all of that. Apprentices with forced labor, gang labor. To order and to humble them, to bring them down. They'd already basically practiced political apartheid. They had separated them from all the other people. And remember, when Israel came into the land of Egypt, they were the upper echelon. They were the ruling class, so to speak, with Joseph and Pharaoh at that time, which Pharaoh, the Hyksos kings, were basically related to them, of the same family bloodline. And we will humble them in their breeding. And that word humble there, that's anoto. And that word is PL infinitive construct. That's a forceful, we're going to break their necks. We're going to beat them down. In a country, in a world today, we have communism, we have socialism. You know what the difference between socialism and communism is? In communism, you have one opinion only. And that's what's trying to be forced upon this country. You can believe what we believe. If you don't believe what we believe, you're our enemy, so we will apartheid you. They don't want peace, they want apartheid. They're going to separate the conservative America from their intentions, and they're going to squelch their voice, freedom of speech. And the right to bear arms in America was not specifically to protect yourself, though that is very important, but is protect yourself from a tyrannical government. I've heard them say that they were using flintlock rifles in those days, and they want AR-15s. I guarantee if they'd had AR-15s in that Second Amendment, they'd have had it there in the very beginning. But armory has changed since then. I don't have a rifle like that at all. I don't even like the looks of them, but I'm old-fashioned, an old man. I have a couple of, or one semi-automatic rifle, I believe. It's an old World War II rifle. But a man ought to be able to arm himself with the best armament he can arm himself with against a tyrannical government if necessary. That's what the Second Amendment is all about. And you should be able to protect yourself and society from the evil forces, the criminals and things. And I've had to do that many times in my life. And just pulling a gun many times will stop the fight. You have to be ready to pull the trigger. But pulling the gun many times, when they know that you're armed, they will go away and bother somebody else. But don't wait too long. That's the one thing about it. You got to be determined. They're going to humble them in their breeding. We're going to cut them off. We're going to commit political apartheid to them. But now we are going to have political upheaval here, and we're going to basically cause genocide against these people. That's our purpose. We're going to stop their breeding. And they built store cities for Pharaoh. Pithon. Pithon means the house of a tomb or the house of God. And Ramses, it means slumber, tremble, and or to vibrate. It was a land where there was a lot of thundering, tremble, and vibrate. The thunder, tremble, and vibrate. A land of war. And this is probably Ramses the first here. Pithon. This Pithon here, in the crown of Pharaoh, there was a cobra head up there, flared out and raised up. And it means to protect. The cobra that protects, the snake that protects, the serpent that protects. Verse number 12 now. We kasher, yanu oto ken yerbia, we kem yefros, wayetsisu ri. And thusly, they afflicted, they humbled, they tortured, and they kept on torturing. In the PL stem, that's intensely. Them because he multiplied Israel as a person multiplied. And thus, they spread, they broke them. They broke through them, is what it says. Yifros, they broke through them, kept on breaking through them. And they had horror, they had evil. From before the sons of Israel. They committed evil before the sons of Israel. And they made them to slave. The Egyptians made them to slave, the sons of Israel, in deep and harsh oppression. Now, according to the book of Jasher, the Levites never took part in this, because they were the gold and silversmiths. 1:14 now. Wayima rinru et hayim ba obada gasha vishomas uvi venim uvi call obada Basada et kal abadatam asher avidu baham lefarek. And they kept on making them intensely bitter, the lives enslaving. They made their lives bitter in slaves. I remember studying about some of the punishments that the Roman and the Greek Empire did upon people. They would commit a man sometimes to row in these warships. They would chain them to the seat. They gave them just enough food to stay alive, and they urinated and they defecated on those benches where they sat. It was a hell hole down there in those places. It was condemning them to a horrible death. In some of the dungeons where they had people, they condemned them to death in the dungeon. They put them there until they starved to death. They'd only give them enough. They'd eat cockroaches off the floor, whatever. They were so hungry, they defecated, they urinated there, and they lived in it. We don't even understand that type of things today, but it's going on in the world still. In some of the Islamic world, or in Africa, in different places. They made their lives bitter, enslaving. Hard. In the clay type cement and in bricks. And in all the slaving work in the field. And all the slaving work which they had slaved. In them, in deep oppression. You know, in war, war is a terrible thing, isn't it? In America, in the Civil War, the North committed atrocities on the South that should have never happened. In the rules of war, that should have not happened. They completed all-out war on the civilian population. They destroyed cities. They destroyed people. They bombed their homes and shot their homes and just killed everything in sight, burned every house down. They just killed every cow, every dog, every cat, everything in the land. Just gone through with genocide. Working conditions. People, I worked before OSHA was instituted. I tell you what, there's a lot of people don't like OSHA today, and it went too far. Yes, it did. It went to extreme nuts. But I worked before OSHA. I worked in such dangerous conditions that it's a wonder that I'm alive. I am crippled from it, but I am alive by the grace of God only. Pete Hilton called me one time, the originator of Hilton Drilling Company. I worked for them for several years. Pete Hilton called me Reese Hilton. Pete Hilton was his brother. I also knew him too. Reese Hilton called me and told me, he said, Jimmy, he says, I got a problem. We got an old green Dremble rig out there in Lost Hills, and I need a derrick man real bad. We're working 12 hours a day shift, and sometimes you may have to work 36 hours before you get off. I'll pay you hazardous duty pay, extra hazardous duty pay, if you'll work derrick for me. And he said, I'm going to tell you what it's like right now before you ever say yes. He said, the derrick has no ladder. You can't ride the blocks because it's full view Idaho. He said, you'll have to climb up the legs of that derrick and just climb back and forth until you get up on the monkey board. But the monkey board has no rails on it on the side. And there's no walkway out there. And all the fingers in the derrick are all gone. He said, there's a little tiny 1 foot wide walkway out there. And he says, you'll be the first shift that's going out there. He said, you'll have to figure out a way to get out there on that monkey board. He said, will you do it? He said, I'll make sure you never are laid off. He said, I need this done. We got to drill 5 holes. And he said, then it'll go in the yard and we'll fix it all up. He said, you can drill, do whatever you want to do. From that time on, he said, you'll be my number one man. I said, well, okay. He said, no, that you're not going to drill as fast. You're not going to get the work done as fast. It's got an old wooden floor on it and all this kind of stuff. I went out there and I looked up in that derrick, full of Idaho, tore to pieces, terrible mess. Danger, 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 like on the front wheels of in the fields of Vietnam. I go up there about 70 feet in the air, And I'm crawling off the edge of that derrick with no safety belt on, no nothing, because we didn't have anything. They had a safety belt up there, but it was a half shot, and we didn't have one. Tied a rope around myself. I got up there and I roped steers and horses and things when I was young. And so I got a rope. I went back down. I saw what I had to do up there. I went down and got a rope, a piece of cotton soft rope. And I threw it out there on the edge. Out there was a corner with a little pipe sticking up on it. And I got a hold of that pipe. And I stretched it over there and I put a hay hauler hitch on it where it was really tight. And then it had a 2-inch piece of pipe. I'm 70 feet off the ground, and I'm walking out there holding on this rope and hope it doesn't come loose on it. So I get over there, and I untie it, and I wrap it around there, and I tie it back up and get it real tight. Then I go to the other side, and I do one on the other side. And here I am walking around the edge of this thing because there is no fingers in the derrick where you put the pipe. There's nothing there. And I'm 70 feet off the ground, like a monkey holding on with his tail. I come out there, and it took me 2.5-3 hours to get the derrick set up to where I could even do anything. And meanwhile, they're working on the floor down there, and they're working in dangerous conditions also. Bad situation. And the first 12 hours I went on there, somebody didn't show up with the derrick man. The next night I got to work another 12 hours, and I had to work my shift again at 12 hours. So that's 36 solid hours in a row working in extremely dangerous conditions. And not only that, there's H2S gas, which kills you faster than the gas chamber in San Quentin. It's deadly. You smell it and you're dead. That's the last thing you'll smell. Well, they didn't have any protective gear or anything else, but it was field out there with H2S gas. You remember that, Marilyn? Hard time, dangerous work. I worked for another driller out there, and he'd killed 2 or 3 men. And you see this, I see this type of thing. You see this hard work. The work was so hard. You'd work out there and work so hard that you'd be in such extreme labor in the wintertime that your clothes would be soaking wet and you would pour sweat out of your shoes or your boots when you came into the doghouse to change clothes, if you could go home. I broke my ankle out there one time in Lost Hills, out by Blackwell's Corner, at the beginning of the shift. I worked all that shift, 8 hours on a broken ankle, in great pain. And they came up with a man short, and it was my man that was short. And the other guy said, "Jim, stay. I said, "I got a broken ankle. You stay. I got to go back and go to the doctor," which I did, and I had a broken ankle. And they wrapped it up, and I went back to work the next day with my ankle wrapped up. I had to keep my ankle taped and wrapped up for 2 or 3 years after that. Working in hard conditions. Working out in the cotton fields. I learned how to walk in the cotton fields, where there weren't any restrooms, there weren't any shade, there weren't any water. If you took water, you took it in a gallon jug wrapped in burlap, and you just carried that along with you. And when I was a little baby, I'd drink out of it every now and then, trying to pick cotton with my grandmother, sitting on her sack, and then when I got a little bit older, she put 2 tote sacks together, and I got to fill mine up. I felt like I was doing something. I worked for this killer driller one time. They called him Killer Mosley. That was his name. I worked derrick for him. And I was up in that derrick, and the elevators on that you took the pipe, picks up elevators, you slam this door, and you pick up the pipe. And when you get up there, I had to carry a sledgehammer with me because the elevators were so wore out they wouldn't come off the pipe. And here the guy is not looking up at me at all. Killer Mosley is just looking the line on the drum. And I'm up there, and I can't get the elevators off the pipe. I'm beating it, and he's laying the elevators and the blocks on top of me on the monkey board, 65, 70 feet in the air. And all I was going up here, and I'm screaming at him. I throw my hard hat at him, and then I throw the sledgehammer at him. And he went bounce, bounce, bounce. He looked around, and he looked up there. I'm underneath all these cables, 1-inch, 2-inch cables, with the blocks on top of me, up there in the derrick, 65, 70 feet in the air. He had another derrick man working for him. I was working on the floor. And he wasn't paying attention again, looking up there, and he catches the derrick. The derrick man was a derrick man out of Texas. He was a great big guy. And he was up on rig 5, which was a full view Idaho. There's no legs and things down there. It's just all open. And the man catches his glove in those worn out elevators, and it pulls him up in the air and drops him and rips the gloves off his hand, and he's hanging down unconscious underneath the monkey board, laying there in midair, unconscious. So we had to go up with the sand line and the elevators and everything, get a hold of the guy, tie him up and put him on the elevators and let him down on the ground. My knees were shaking together out there. I had nothing to hold on or anything, but I was saving a man's life. Cecil B. DeMille made a deal, made a movie with all these people there and the people caught between the blocks and squishing them and killing them and everything. That was about like it was out in the oil patch in the 1960s and 50s. Here we are. Israel under great stress and duration. And he said to the king of Egypt, to the midwives, to the Hebrew women, of whom the name one was Shephrah, which means brightness, by the way. Brightness, page 1051, Brown Driver and Briggs is going to look that up. And the name to the woman, the second, was Puah, which means it means blast. It means like blast. Now, these women were the head of their processions. They were the number one midwives. And he said, in your midwifing of the Hebrew women, and you look and see upon the birth stool, upon the birth wheel, literally is what it was, a birth stool. And if a son, ye shall slit his throat, you shall break his neck. And if a daughter, you shall have kept on letting her live. What this word here means, if you see, you shall kill. That word is mihamitim. Mihamitim. That means to strangle. That means to break the neck of. It means to slit the neck of. As soon as you see what his sex is, break his neck if he's a boy. Break his neck, cut his throat. Kill him. 117 now. Vatiranu ha yalidoth et ha elihim willo asu ka asher divar. And they feared, they kept on fearing God. The midwives kept on fearing the God. Ha Elohim. And not they had done just as he had spoken. Vayikra Malek Mitzrayim Laya Lidoth Vayomer Lahem Madua asiten hadavar hazeh vati shayinu et hayiladim. That's what it says in Hebrew anyway. And he called and he kept on calling the king of the Egyptians to the midwiving ones. And he said to them, and he kept on saying to them, why have you done this? Why have you done this thing and have kept alive the male offspring, the male birthed ones? And then it says here, and they said, and they kept on saying to the king, the midwives, the midwifing ones, and to Pharaoh. Pharaoh means what? The man in the big house, huh? Because not like other women, like the Egyptian women, the Hebrew women, they're full of life, full of vigor, full of life, they're strong. The Egyptian women are panty waist, so to speak. These Hebrew women are tough. They're full of vigor, full of life. And before we're able to get to them, they've already given birth. Vayetev Elohim Li Mayal Ladoth Vayivev Ha'am Vaya Asmu Miod. God did good to the midwives, to the birthing ones. And he multiplied the people, and they became strong exceedingly. He made their houses, he made them very special in their houses. He made them very special in their houses. 121, and became because they feared the midwives, the birthing ones, the Elohim, he made for them families and households. Families and households. Households that respected them and families that loved them. Our Father, we send this message out. It is a message of fear, hardness, destruction, apartheid, political upheaval that took these people hardly before they knew what happened. Father, protect us from this today in many ways. Father, please forgive me where I fail you. Use this message wherever it goes in the world to touch lives with it. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.